fell out of the swing. The three of us just watched her fall. Then when I woke, well, there wasn't a baby at all. I didn't want you to meet. Then there we all were in the lift. He knelt at your feet and he gave you a housewarming gift. Better tell no one your dreams. Better tell no one your dreams. Tell them your secrets by all means. But better tell, better tell no one your dreams. Wrote the best song in the world from musical box and a bird. But when I woke, I'd forgotten the tune and the words. The flowers flying in the kitchen. Someone said, let's bake some bread. But I misheard and I thought she said, let's break some bed. Better tell no one your dream. Better tell no one your dreams. They'll try to tell you what it all means. So better tell, better tell no one your dreams. I was front row at the show. There was your friend down the aisle. She started to sing and I knew it was you all the while. And I loved you before I first met you. Adrift in your infinite charms. And when I woke, you were lying right here in my arms. You said, better tell no one your dreams. Better tell no one your dreams. Better tell no one your dreams. Tell them your secrets, yeah, by all means. But better tell, better tell no one your dreams.
Hello and welcome to the Strange Brew Podcast. My name is Jason Barnard and that was Wesley Stace and Better Tell No One Your Dreams from his aptly named Wesley Stace's John Wesley Harding album. A huge welcome, Wes.
Thank you very much.
A few reasons to talk to you today, one of which is that you're going from, I think, the 10th of May on your first UK tour since 2008. Because although you're British, you don't currently reside in Britain. Therefore, people, certainly over in the UK, are not as familiar as they probably should be given the quality of your songwriting.
Well, that's very nicely put. I moved to America in 1990. My first record came out on Demon in 1988 or 9 or something like that. And then we had the idea to get a world record deal rather than a kind of Demon record deal. And so we got a band together and got a deal with Sire. And that kind of brought me over America touring. And then I've lived everywhere since then. I've originally kind of landed in Atlanta a bit and then LA and then San Francisco for much of the 90s, then Seattle at the end of that, and then Brooklyn. And now I'm in Philadelphia. So I just haven't lived in England or the United Kingdom for years. And that means that I'm over there less often. And also, my mum's sadly dead now and my dad lives in Italy, but when I used to come to England, I used to more likely spend time with my family than do gigs. So yes, it's my fault and not so many British gigs.
And that was amplified by you being known as John Wesley Harding?
Well, yeah, that's, I mean, you know, I haven't done a gig in Britain really. There's a sidebar to that because I do also do this show called Cabinet of Wonders, which has been going in basically in New York, although we do it all over the place. We just did one in Tulsa at the Bob Dylan Center, which was dynamite. But we do that in New York mostly, and we're just coming up to like the 120th show, been going for 10 years. It's been going a long time. And we've done actually two or three of those in London, one at Bush Hall and a couple at the Cecil Sharp House. So those have kind of happened more recently. But what happened was I took the name John Wesley Harding when I was doing my PhD, and I didn't presume those people needed to know that I had an about to crash and burn musical career. But the musical career didn't crash and burn, and I was landed with the name John Wesley Harding, which was totally fine. So I put out albums under John Wesley Harding for years, and then I put out a novel under the name Wesley Stace, my real name, and that was a successful novel for me, and I've written four or five since then. And after a bit, being known as John Wesley Harding on the for music and Wesley Stace, it was just stupid, and it made all the introductions way too long. And so I thought, well, let's do it under the name Wesley Stace. It's always a tricky and bad idea to change your name mid-musical career, but I felt like it. So there you go.
And in this podcast, just as an introduction to those that don't know your work, 10 songs we've heard one, so we've got 9 more to go.
Yeah.
And then from now on, we're going roughly in a chronological order. We've now got Dark, Dark Heart, and that's from your
Right.
Here Comes the Groom album. And there's quite a lot of notable musicians that featured on that LP.
Yeah, it was a very exciting album to make. I'd had this record label with Demon, and then I got this record label with Sire, Warner Brothers. And I went to this bloke Seymour Stein's office, and I played him my song The Devil in Me that my manager Glenn thought might be a single. And he said, that's great. I think we want to sign you. I'll introduce you to your producer later on this afternoon. I mean, it's like a whole ridiculous fantasy, but that is how it happened. And so we needed to get a band together fairly swiftly. A name that might not be as familiar as some of the names on there, which we can go through because they're all fun names, is a guy called Kenny Craddock, who was Van Morrison's musical director for a bit and in a later version of Lindisfarne, and is a genius, was a genius Hammond organ and keyboard player and arranger. He happened to have a studio down in Hastings, and I'd already made demos with him, so it was very obvious that he'd be the keyboard player. And then we were looking for bass and drums, and Glenn said, well, Bruce Thomas is my manager. Glenn Colson, his name is. He said, Bruce Thomas is my landlord. You know, we should use Bruce Pete Thomas. I said, that's a very good idea. And then they suggested this monster guitar player called Steve Donnelly, who sadly, like Kenny Craddock, no longer with us. So the Bruce Pete Thomas are alive, but Steve and Kenny are dead. And then we went out to, we did that out, the album and the second album with that exact same band at Eden in Chiswick. And then both times we took them out to America and got people to play on them. So we also had Dave Alvin play and Ronnie Blakely and Elizabeth Barraclough, Peter Case, Victoria Williams, all the people that I loved. Because although I was making rock music with the Attractions, I was essentially and still am, you know, kind of a folky acoustic singer-songwriter. And I wanted, you know, I was listening to Dave Alvin and I was listening to Peter Case. This song, Dark, Dark Heart, actually, bizarrely, I think Pete's on it, but I think Steve Donnelly plays the bass, maybe, I can't quite remember, but this we did at Tom Robinson, who was, I had no great supporters early on in my life, but one of them, and the prime one was Tom Robinson, who let me do a load of demos at his studio. He had a studio beneath his house in Hammersmith, and I also happened to record this song there. I don't quite remember how we did it, but so this isn't actually from the main body of the album. There were two or three songs, and I always quite like this one because it had a little kind of Buddy Holly clip to it.
In an office 2 miles underground, they can't tell night from day. Secretaries typing errors of judgment in eternally full entry. Coming unstuck with nothing to show. Well, you stuck to him like felt on Velcro. But now he's gone solo. He's taken all the amps, smashed the bedside lamp, taken all the light bulbs and the decorative wheel pants. You got a dark, dark heart. You got a dark, dark heart. smiling face. What you had doesn't even have the grace to be forgotten without a trace. It lies, it cheats, it moans, it bleeds, almost human in every detail. In the sticky room, no one goes to bed. There's nothing to say that hasn't been said. It's not enough to wish you were dead. He had the lost love, but he didn't know why. He jumped out the window, man, he thought he could fly. He got a dark, dark heart. He's got a dark, dark heart. He's got a dark, dark heart. It's the heart of darkness. So fetch it. You got a dark, dark heart. You got a dark, dark heart. You got a dark, dark heart. It's the heart of darkness. It's 4 a.m. inside my mind, but it's dusk out on the street. The lamps are burning, fireflies, I could not stand the heat. I got cool bed linen, baby, so the story should be complete. Oh, but somewhere in the back and behind, there's a light that makes me feel unkind. Those stupid things I made you sign. It ain't Deus Ex Machina or some so subpoena. Just when things mean nothing, it makes you meaner. You got a dark, dark heart. You got a dark, dark heart. You got a dark, dark heart. It's the heart of darkness. It's the heart of darkness. It's the heart of darkness.
We've next got If You Have Ghosts, Where the Pyramid Meets the Eye, from a tribute to Rocky Erickson. What's the background behind it?
Right. Well, Warner Brothers were putting this tribute album together, and that was the glory years of tribute albums. You know, people had just kind of, I mean, there'd always been tribute albums, but there'd just been that one, The Bridge, the Neil Young one that was so great. Had there been that excellent one to Leonard Cohen around then, or was that, you know, the ones right at the beginning of the tribute albums? And they were doing one to Rocky Erickson, and it had, here's the true story behind it. They wanted me to be on it because I was one of the Warner Brothers acts and I liked Rocky Erickson, you know, and there were going to be amazing people on this. It was like ZZ Top and Julian Cope and the Creedence Clearwater Band and REM. And it was just a fantastic, it was an incredible, you know, to see your name next to those people. It's just, you know, when you're young, it's so exciting. And Howie Klein, who after Seymour Stein signed me, was sent over to England to say, Seymour signs a lot of people, it doesn't all work out, make some demos, and if the album doesn't come out, sorry. But he liked what he heard, so I stayed on the album and things were looking good. He had run a record label called 415, on which Rocky Erickson recorded, I think, 2 albums during not his glory years. Good albums, but not the 13th Floor Elevators and etc., etc. So Howie Klein said to me, you've got to record one of the songs on these albums on 415. And here are my 2 or 3 suggestions. He played me If You Have Ghosts. I said to the band and Andy Paley, the producer, what do you think of this album? Song. Everybody said, that's fantastic. Let's do that song. And it's the best the band ever sounded, I think. And, you know, when you consider that we made 2 whole albums full of my songs, but my songs are very choppy and changey and have a lot of chords in them. And this genius, simple song by Rocky Erickson doesn't. It was a song where they could really groove on the song. And with Andy Paley producing and Mark Lynette engineering and the band able to cut loose a bit, I think we did it on its own, but it could have been attached to one of those album sessions. And it's just the best they ever sounded. It's a fabulous sounding track. I'm very proud of it.
It almost feels like one of your songs.
We really lived that song, and I've played it many times since. And it does always feel like a cover because the words are so kind. In fact, I don't even think I had the words right because there wasn't the internet back then. You know, you couldn't just go on and find chords and tabs and lyrics to everything. So I had to listen to the album to work out the lyrics, and some of them just aren't right. I met Rocky a few times, and he, I don't know whether he remembered I'd recorded that song, although I think he did because his brothers were quite keen on it. But a funny thing about me is, for somebody who really cares about lyrics, I'm terrible at working out what lyrics are on songs. I mean, it takes me ages to find them. And I ask someone and they go, oh, that's, you know, so, and I go, oh yeah, you're right. I can never hear that. It's probably to do with my hearing rather than my love of lyrics.
Yeah.
in the mid-90s, you collaborated a bit and linked up with Bruce Springsteen, didn't you? How did that happen?
Oh, it's a long story. I went to... There was a band of writers called the Rock Bottom Remainders. And in that band was Stephen King, Amy Tan, sometimes one of the Mitfords sang Maxwell Silver Hammer, Dave Marsh, famous Springsteen writer, and Joel Selvin, who's just brought out a fantastic book on the drummer Jim Gordon,
yes,
called Drums and Demons. Just to put a name to a face, that's who Joel Selvin is. He's a great guy, and he's a rock critic from San Francisco. Now, once young terror about town, now a venerable old man. And Selvin was always very nice to me, and I thought he was a good guy. And so I went in LA to see the Rock Bottom Remainders play, in which these writers, for, I think, charity, were kind of happy to be making a fool of themselves, you could say, but also really making some pretty decent music, you know, lots of covers. Stephen King, you know, I mean, it was fun. And I remember Selvin played like the ocarina on Wild Thing or something like that. And so I'm standing at the back of the Palomino in LA, 90 something or other, 4-5, 3-4, 4-5. And I find myself standing right next to Bruce Springsteen. And I go, oh, are you here to make fun of Dave Marsh? Because I'm here to make fun of Joel Selvin. And so we started talking. And after about a very enjoyable conversation, about 20 minutes later, you know, I told him a few of my good Springsteen stories about going to see him at Bramall Lane and, you know, all these stuff, you know, like everyone's got stories. And he said, oh, you'll never beat that moment when your first album, you see it on a Columbia label, you know, and I was talking about when I saw the Sire, you know, and it was just very nice. So we exchanged email or phone number or whatever you did. And a little bit after that, I happened to be playing at McCabe's, which I do the whole time and did a couple of months ago. And he came down. And so I said, oh, do you want to play Wreck on the Highway, which was a song in my set? And it just happened that that I was making a video at the time. So that was filmed, photographed, Super 8, 16 video. Sound at McCabe's is good. They took a soundboard. He had my guitar. The guitar had a bad battery in it. So at the beginning of the song, he goes, is this the one with the bad battery? And we just became friends. And he used to invite me to his parties and, you know, at his house. And that's how I met Tom Hanks, Danny DeVito, you know, because that's who was there. Jack Nicholson. It was amazing. And then I moved to the East Coast and we just kept being friends. And so occasionally something pops up, like I'm teaching somewhere. I was teaching at a place called Fairleigh Dickinson and he came and did Wreck on the Highway and we've hung out at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and all kinds. And he's an extremely nice guy, as I think you would imagine. And I try not to trouble him too often because I'm a respectful grown-up person, even though what I really am is a Bruce Springsteen super fan. And he's not a man who is not very happy to talk about his work with you, you know, songwriting stuff. And I happen to know through a couple of friends of mine, and this was never a role I needed from him, but he's been incredibly helpful to a couple of songwriters I know in terms of dealing with some of the stickier issues of, you know, just trying to be a songwriter, but being quite famous. You know, that's never troubled me. But, so, you know, a couple of people I know who've been very helped by him. It's a great guy.
You've chosen Kiss Me, Miss Liberty.
Well, I remember the title came from, I was reading a biography of the great film director, Preston Sturges. And he turned out to be a songwriter because he tried to make money any way he could. And there's a list of his song titles in the back of the book, and one was Kiss Me, Miss Liberty. And I thought, oh my God, that's such an amazing title. I think I should do something with that. And I'm sure his original was quite light, but I decided to make mine a kind of hymn to freedom. And what you hear on this song probably is a much more acoustic version of me, because after the Attractions albums that I recorded with Sire, and then a third album that I made with Steve Berlin from Los Lobos, which we didn't pick a song from here, but that's an album I like quite a bit called Why We Fight. After that, I was tired of big drums crashing around the whole time. And I really wanted, because I thought my, whatever was me about me, just playing the acoustic guitar and stuff, just got a little bit lost in some of the production. And so now I was living in San Francisco and I met a genius called Chris von Snyden, still making music, still making great music. And he and I started producing my records together. with the exact idea, make the guitar and the voice the center of it. And we had some great fun on those records. You know, we made one called New Deal and one called Awake. This is from the first one, New Deal. But San Francisco was full of great musicians. You know, people would come through. Chuck Prophet was lived around the corner. Greg Lease, the genius slide guitar and pedal steel player, came through. So they were just wonderful records to make. And we basically made them in his basement studio. We went to get them mastered at A&M by the famous master Bill Inglot. And he listened to them. He was listening very carefully. And he went, "What's that noise there?" And he turned it up, isolated it, turned it up live. And we were both like, "Oh yeah, that's the bed squeaking." Wes was sitting, I was sitting on the bed doing the vocals.
Up in Westminster, the bell fell down. Took 200 years to touch the ground. Bullies drifted by and turned brown. Foreign plane was down. Dogs came running from their cold dog pound. They leapt through the fence and ran downtown. And the convicts turned their ship around. And they were homeward bound. Kiss me, Miss Liberty. Kiss me. Take me to bed. So I can be free as well. Not just in my head. Kiss me, Miss Liberty. Kiss me. Lift me above. Slaves were saved from their chain gang. Knives cut men down just about to hang. Lost love returned just like a boomerang. And it was I who sang. Kiss me, Miss Liberty. Confinement anymore. I won't be ignored. Kiss me, Miss Liberty. Take me to bed so I can be free as well. Not just in my head. Kiss me, Miss Liberty. Kiss me, kiss me, kiss me, oh.
our next song is linked to one of your books, and that song is Misfortune, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I'd always written story songs, but story songs are kind of best suited to kind of acoustic guitar and solo-ish. I mean, it's not like Bruce Springsteen can't write a story song, but there's kind of something about the intimacy of that. And I started writing what I would call kind of slightly surreal story songs. And on this particular album, Awake, there are two. There's one called Window Seat, which is about a young child living his whole life on an aeroplane. And there's one called Misfortune, two words on the album, like misfortune. And it's the story. The first lyric is, I was born with a coat hanger in my mouth. That's disgusting. I was dumped down south. That's a good rhyme. I was found by the richest man in the world, you know, and I didn't know where to go after that. And I was like, who brought me up as a girl? And so it's the story of a boy who gets brought up in girls' clothes in a stately home. The dad dies. He inherits the fortune. Everyone hates him. He runs away, et cetera, et cetera. I played this song live for ages, often while my mate Robert Lloyd was playing some discursive mandolin solos in the middle of it. And I just kept thinking about this kid. And I'd written various aborted starts, appropriately enough, given the coat hanger, to novels. And I decided it was because I couldn't finish them because the novel idea, the ideas I'd had weren't capacious enough to consider, you know, there wasn't enough I was interested in, but I felt really interested in this boy brought up as a girl. And over the next 7 years, which is a long time, I wrote a very long novel, which was published by Little Brown in America and Jonathan Cape in England, and kept me very busy for a long time. And then after I published it too, but this song, and that's called Misfortune, but just one word, because you don't really want a pun in a book title, I don't think, whereas it's okay in a song. So this song is the song Misfortune that started off as a 3.5 minute song, but ended up as 7 years of my life and a 600 page novel.
A hugely successful and critically acclaimed novel as well.
Yes, it was. I mean, I'm surrounded by books. As you can see, I read a lot of books. I teach. I'm into novels. And it's very satisfying that some of mine got published. It's a very, very difficult thing to do. You really have to get lost in it. Very unlike writing a song, I found. And, you know, it still keeps going. It's like at the moment that somebody's just written a film script of it in France that they're trying to make into a movie in English. And, you know, it just keeps rolling, which is great.
I was born with a coat hanger in my mouth. Oh yeah. And I was dumped down south. I was found by the richest man in the world. Oh yeah. He brought me up as a girl. My sheets are satin, but my mind's a mess. There are worse things, I confess, than drinking tea in a pretty dress. And I'm here to tell you that it's not all bad. Count your blessings and maybe you'll be glad. Died, I inherited his wealth. Oh yeah, and I revealed myself. I was snubbed by friends that he'd never had. Oh yeah, they sided with my dad. All my riches are beyond control. it's the same old rigmarole. They say I've lost my very soul. Maybe I have, but I'm here to tell you that it's not all bad. Count your blessings and maybe you'll be glad. And as I grew, so did my faith. I gave it up and changed my name. It's catch as catch can. Was I wrong? They threw me right back there in that lane. Oh yeah, they said, boy, start again. So when you're turning off your bedside light, consider me in my wretched plight. Looks like I'm gonna have to get it right this time, but I'm here to tell you that's not all bad. Count your blessings and you'll be glad. Count your blessings and maybe you'll.
So now we have Our Lady of the Highways. That's with Steve Earle, isn't it?
Yeah, we made this album. I had a brief in the late 90s. The major labels came a-knocking again. Well, they didn't. One did. And it was called Hollywood. And it was a bloke called Rob Seidenberg, who I'd known when he was editor of Cream many years before. And it turned out Hollywood had done fuck all except bought Queen's catalogue. That was the one thing that Hollywood had...
That's where I've heard of them.
That was it. But my friend Rob, because he wasn't kind of a by-the-book guy, he's always been a bit of a maverick, if you like. And my friend Rob, who I wasn't in contact with at all, signed this band called Fastball. Now, I don't know whether you remember them, but they had a huge hit called The Way, and it was Rob signing. So basically, Rob was a bit of a square peg in a round hole at Hollywood, but he'd signed, apart from the Queen catalogue, their only hit was Fastball's The Way. So they gave him Mammoth Records, more or less, as a kind of a fiefdom, and said, who do you want to sign? And one of the people, and you know, one of the people was the Young Fresh Fellows and the Minus Five, my friend Scott McCoy's projects. And Scott said, well, what about Wes? You know, Wes is always trying to make pop music and never has enough money to do it. So Rob was the first person to ever give me an actual, really enough money to make the music that I wanted to make. And I did it, I able to do it for two albums. The first of which was The Confessions of St. Ace that we made in Nashville. And that mean that, you know, Al Anderson from NRBQ came down and Steve Earle and Jimmy Dale Gilmore. And it was just fantastic. And Steve Earle kindly sang a duet on this one, Our Lady of the Highways, which if your English, British listeners don't know, is a fantastic statue down I-95 on the east coast of America. And it's a big statue of Our Lady looking, caring for the travellers on the highway, which she notably didn't do on I-695 the other day when the Francis Scott Key Bridge was hit by a large freighter, of which I, which is a terrible tragedy. But anyway, so that's what Our Lady of the Highways is about. And Steve Earle not only sings, but plays his fantastic mandolin, which he's so great at.
I'm here in Philadelphia. She got stuck down in D.C. It's a wretched night, it's raining, but she's coming up to meet me. There's nothing I can do. By the time she gets halfway, she'll be tired of 95. The spray off those trucks sucks, and I hope that she gets here alive. And Our Lady of the Highways, keep my baby straight tonight. Guide her safely down the road and keep her always in the light. Let the sad moon looking down on me shine bright as she comes here, till Our Lady of the Highways may appear. Sometimes the weather's worse when you have some place to be. Like the time I drove to Boston in the snow from New York City, frozen to the bone. And airplanes flew high above on metal wings and prayers. And we tried to find some radio, hoping one day we'd get. Guide us safely down the road and keep her always in the light. Let the sad moon looking down on me shine bright as she comes here, till Our Lady of the Highways may appear. And I guess she always gets here, heaven knows just how she does. And that statue of Our Lady, San Francisco, it's a town too hard for love. She's driving from Seattle, 800 miles above me. Why are we apart? So please don't let the fog roll heavy on that Highway 5. I want her here soon, but I want her here alive. Guide her safely down the road and keep her always in line. Let the sad moon looking down on me shine bright as she comes here, till Our Lady of the Highways may appear. Till Our Lady of the Highways may appear.
You mentioned the minus five, and I think this track features it. It's Oh Pandora from your album, Who Has Changed and Who Was Dead?
Yeah, well, what happened was we made that one album for Hollywood, The Confessions of St. Ace, that Our Lady of the Highways was on. And then we made another album, which was originally called The Man with No Shadow, was then released after Mammoth was closed down. They gave me back the album. And I eventually released it as Adam's Apple, and then more recently, it was released in its original form as The Man with No Shadow. Long story. After that, I was lucky to get out of that situation, particularly with the album. That was very kind of them to give me that album for free, basically. And I didn't know what to do for my next album. So I picked my favorite band, went to Portland and knocked out an album with them, and got into this rather nefarious but very understandable habit of using bands I like to make albums with. And recently this has happened with the Jayhawks, one of my favorite bands, the Decemberists, another of my favorite bands, and the Minus Five. And so with Robert Lloyd, the guy who was playing the mandolin solos in Misfortune, I stuck him in the Minus Five, and we went to Portland and made a a really nice record. I did put it out on my own label, so it's not probably the one of mine that's had the most currency in the world, but I adore this record, and the arrangements which we just came up with in the rehearsals, are dynamite. Peter Buck on jangle, Scott McCoy on bass, Bill Rieflin, the beautiful drummer from REM, Ministry and King Crimson, a great, great guy, sadly, living in the same rock and roll heaven as Kenny Craddock and Steve Donnelly now. God, that'd be such a good band of my favorite dead musicians who played with me. And Kurt Block, one of my favorite guitar players on guitar. And I often find myself messing around with myths because people understand the myths. They remember the stories. And Pandora's a good myth because they have the, you know, the girl and all the temptation involved. And so I just like to flip them around a bit and see what happens.
I know your secret, and I promise I'll never tell. I'm under its magic spell. Oh, I'll try to keep it to myself. I know you have a terrible vanity. Oh, how do you get to sleep? It must possess you every waking minute, wondering just what is in it. There it is in front of you. I know that you want it to. And don't be shy, Pandora. Pandora, don't be shy. Sister, you just can't resist me. By far, oh, but can you handle never knowing? And what if you're wrong? Just denying yourself the best. Maybe that's how you fail the test. Oh, don't you have a life to live and have you no initiative? And quick before we both decay, baby, are you made of clay? And don't be shy, Pandora. Sister, you just can't resist, and neither can I. And it never hurts to try. You can't win, just give in, Pandora. It's no sin, slither in, Pandora.
We move forward a couple of years and we get to, there's a Starbucks where the Starbucks used to be. So I'm assuming that's about globalization.
Well, yeah. But what happened was in Brooklyn, where I lived at the time, didn't make the album there, but in Brooklyn, they were ripping apart the middle of, well, it doesn't matter, but Flatbush Avenue. And they were sticking what is now the Barclays Center in there. And they had a basketball team ready to move in from elsewhere. And it was all sweetheart deals. And I got quite involved in the protests for that movement, which in the end, the people who were in the apartments got paid a lot of money to go out. And in the end, nothing was going to stop it, I suppose, in the end. But I felt that we needed a new kind of anti-development song. And nobody could sing Big Yellow Taxi. You know, they paved paradise and put up a parking lot endlessly because, yeah, it's bad. Everybody knows this. So I was like, well, how can I contribute to this debate or move this forward in any way? And I realized that what's happening all the time is like it's just Starbucks replacing Starbucks. And I remember seeing an Onion headline that was Starbucks opens in Starbucks toilet. And I remember seeing that and thinking, oh, and well, not that particular thing, but all these ideas were kind of bubbling around in my head. And so the bridge of that song is, I miss the old Starbucks, but the new one's just the same. It's got coffee and CDs. It's even got the same name. I wouldn't have even noticed if you hadn't have told me. But there's a Starbucks where the Starbucks used to be. And we made quite a cute video for it with me running from Starbucks to Starbucks, which was quite with my friend Matt. That was really quite a fun video to make. This album I really enjoyed making with Scott McCoy producing, and the band was the Decemberists. And we made this at a great place called Type Foundry in Portland. Boy, I've made a few records in Portland and I always love going there. It's full of great musicians. And the Decemberists are fantastic.
There's a freeway where we played football in the fields. Apartments on the pictured Highbury. There's a shed called Deer Creek, of which my one critique is there's no creek now and it's all deer free. There's a Walgreens where there were no walls, just greenery. There's a theme park in a palace in Tennessee. That tree there is a pylon, but some things you can rely on. There's a Starbucks where the Starbucks used to be. There's a Starbucks where the Starbucks used to be. There's a Starbucks where the Starbucks used to be. Starbucks used to be. There's a stadium where we used to drink at Freddy's, for a team that no one likes or wants or needs. They said they'd revitalize the place. Now there's a million parking spaces, maybe bedrooms for the homeless refugees. There's a chain store where mom and pop once prospered. They're divorced now and they live in penury. Their kids grew up and moved away. I hear that happens anyway. There's a Starbucks where they live, I guarantee. There's a Starbucks where the Starbucks used to be. There's a Starbucks where the Starbucks used to be. There's a hard luck story everywhere you look, but all the glory. There's a Starbucks where the Starbucks used to be. And I miss the old Starbucks, but the new one's just the same. It's got coffee, CDs, it's even got the same name. Told me there's a Starbucks where the Starbucks used to be. There's a Starbucks where the Starbucks used to be. There's a Starbucks where the Starbucks used to be. There's
used to be. There's a Starbucks where the Starbucks used to be.
So now we get to just over a decade ago and off your album self-titled, and it's We Will Always Have New York. So that's a bit of a live favourite of yours, isn't it?
Yeah, well, yeah, I do play it a lot. You know, self-titled was the first album I put out under Wesley Stace when I made that kind of decision. And when I made that kind of decision, I thought, well, if I'm going to put out my records under my own name, perhaps I should do something that I haven't done very much, which is write about myself. And it's not that the songs aren't full of my feelings and my philosophies and or my anger about things and my love of things and my love of people and all kinds, but they weren't like Starbucks is not about my own experiences, really. Oh, Pandora. I mean, we could go through every line. I'd say Our Lady of the Highways actually is a confessional song of that type. It's me thinking of people I love, thinking of them driving a long way and hoping they don't die in bad weather on the way. So I set myself a little task, which was to write about kind of real things. I'd just never done it before. It had popped up, but I hadn't done a whole project of it. And so the album's full of that. And so New York, that song New York, is kind of all my memories of New York from the very first day I arrived. I was at a hotel called, I think, the Roosevelt. And Andy Paley said, I'm going to do you the greatest favor ever. I'm going to pick you up in the morning and we're going to walk to the bottom of New York and I'll show you everything on the way. And we saw the Flatiron Building and we saw Radio City because he'd done it a million times. And so that's the first line, you know, walking down Fifth Avenue in 1988. And it's every line is a thing that happened to me in New York. So it like all put into one song. And it's just a song I really, you know, so 9/11's in there because I was in Brooklyn then. And the whole kind of history of me in New York is in there. And then me moving to Philadelphia, which is what happened. But I love this album. I hardly yet let the drummer use any cymbals at all. So it has quite a dead sound. It's not a splashy sound at all. And I thought that was a good album to make as my first album under my own name. Unfortunately, when you change your name, people have to really get acquainted with that idea. So if anybody else is going to change their name, what I'd say to them is, put out an album you don't care about very much first. then do the album you really want to do. That's a good idea.
Walking down Fifth Avenue in 1988, a glimpse through the buildings of the Empire State, from a listed interior of uncertain date. To the wrong address, of course. And it's Union and Washington and Madison Square. It's a long way back, it's a short way there. We fell in love, I got scared, and you kissed me on West 4th. And we will always have New York. Homeless in the library, washing in the stalls. Meet me at the Strand, where hand in hand we will recall all the books from many years ago that no one reads at all. You can steal, but don't get. And the F train wait for the G train slow. And the C won't move till the A train goes. September ghosts, they never say hello. Oh, but now they want to talk. They will always have New York. All your blazing lights and your flaming lips and your full moon shining on my lunar eclipse. sound of vinyl when the needle skips and the scratches on my back. A twice told tale and an ice skating ring. I couldn't keep my food down, but I held my drink. And I might as well write in invisible ink. Rain on sidewalk chalk. We will always have New York. A Woody Allen movie played beneath the stars. 7,000 people who laughed one laugh. Oh, I wasn't even there, but I got his autograph. Memories have walked from the dead dog park where the sick dogs go, nipping at your ankles from the undergrowth. Oh, thank you for inviting me. Enjoy the show. It's my last resort. And your pink teacup and your bottom line. Mercer books on a glass of wine. My piano has a broken spine. And it needs your tuning fork. We will always have New York. I'm on one hell of an accelerate on someone else's dime. One day they'll put your picture in the New York Times. Now you call me Mr. Stace. I'm running out of rhymes. I do what I ought. Now I live in a different town. I'll put on 100 pounds. I won't write another song. I won't make another sound. No, I won't talk. Never write to me. Oh, now you never call. I'm in Philadelphia. It's no distance at all. And you still hold the fort. And we will always have New York. We will always have New York.
Tell us about the Secret series. That seems to be for review and on archiving of your material.
Yeah. I've always had a little thing about putting little books of lyrics together. Not a kind of big, all my lyrics in a big, just beautiful. I love little beautiful thin books. I'm looking at a whole shelf of them now. I love little beautiful books. And I suddenly thought, what I would like to do is re-record all my songs as solo acoustic songs. That's a project, because some of them start as solo acoustic songs. You turn them into band songs. When they become band songs, they get riffs. And you want to recreate those riffs when you play them solo acoustic. You might choose to whistle a part or get out on the guitar. But if suddenly, if the song's got a riff that goes, you can't suddenly not play that riff somehow, because people are just missing out in their minds. So oftentimes that's happened when I wanted to play a song live. I've thought, oh, how can I actually do this live so it kind of sounds like what people want? And you come to a kind of detente with yourself and you work it out. But other songs, you know, they started in the studio. There is no acoustic version of them. So I thought, well, that'd be a really fun idea. Record each one of my albums as a solo acoustic song. So basically, if you take my career in the last 30 years to be a bunch of solo records and then basically 12 band records, many of which have been represented on this show very kindly by you this afternoon. But I'm going to release them as these little books with all the lyrics in and an introduction about by me about what I was trying to do on the record all that time ago. And then some contemporary interview at the back and some stuff. And it's just a little book and the CD slips into it. And because I wanted to make it super special, I made them, there's only 250 copies of each one and they're numbered and I sign them all. You can buy the music, it's available digitally and that, but you know, the books are like this special little, and I'll tell you what's really good out of it. I now have many more songs in my arsenal to play on the May tour in the UK, because not only, you know, some of these songs I haven't played for years and now I like them again and I can play them acoustically.
So the first day is the 10th of May.
10th of May in Canon Frome in Herefordshire. And then the 11th of May in my hometown of Hastings.
You go north as well.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. And also I wanted to say one other thing just for your listeners, if they don't know about that. There's a project called The Good Lyre, L-Y-R-E. My first band was called The Good Lyres, that Attractions band. But this is called The Good Lyre with a Y, like, you know, the lyre of ancient times. And it was a beautiful project. During lockdown, when everyone was bored and isolated, I had fans via my Facebook page suggest what song they would like somebody else to cover of mine. And people said, oh, I want to hear Roseanne Cash do this and Bob Dylan do that and blah, blah, blah. And if there was any possibility of one of those working, I got in touch with that person and got them to do it. So Graham Parker did The Devil in Me and Roseanne Cash did I'm Wrong About Everything and Tanya Donnelly. And if you look on Bandcamp, that whole album's there. All the proceeds of that go to Sweet Relief, the Musicians Welfare Fund.
Never know the perfect time to hit the bedside light. And then we lie awake, watch headlights climb the blinds. I want you to know what's going on in my mind. I thought I was immortal a little while ago. I thought that I was right, but now I know I'm wrong about everything. I think that I can sing. When you hear the song, you want to sing along. I'm wrong about everything. I think I know what's happening. I think you like our song, but I'm wrong. Colors fade to gray, I'm left with black and white. Don't know why I try to fight with what is right. The truth is on our lips, it looks like time to tell. But you know I could be wrong about that as well. I thought a happy ending was more or less assured. I thought a little warmth could win the war. I'm wrong about everything. I think that I can sing. When you hear the song, you want to sing along. I'm wrong about everything. I think I know what's happening. I think you like a song, but I'm wrong. I'll do the best I can. Be your lover. I'll stand corrected just to be elected. I'll do what I can do to get up close to you. I'm wrong about everything. Think that I can sing. Hear the song, you want to sing along. I'm wrong about everything. Think I know what's happening. think you'll like our song. Think you'll like our song. Think you'll like our song, but I'm wrong. I'm so wrong.
Now we're getting to, I think, what is your most recent album, Late Style, and we have Your Bright Future, and that's a slight change in sound. I understand that you listen to music that's different to the style that you record.
It's true. I'm not a great listener to singer-songwriters. It doesn't mean I don't like them. I go and see people live and I just think, oh, they're so good. But I tend not to put on Randy Newman or Josh Ritter, both of whom I think are phenomenally great songwriters. I tend not to put it on. But what I do put on, you know, as I can see, you know, to my right now, I just happen to listen to quite a lot of jazz, quite a lot of soul music, quite a lot of progressive rock. I mean, just, you know, I listen to a lot of things that, you know, they're records like you, they're CDs. There's a lot of them. They're all over the place. There's too many of them. What I really wanted, this is a long way of saying, I really wanted my music to swing a little more. Like, one doesn't associate necessarily the jazz and the soul with the wordy white man lyrics.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But then I thought, why can't my music get a little bit of what makes me happy about that music? And so I started thinking more about, oh, those jazzier bits of Randy Newman, which led me to, Mose Allison, which led me to, oh, Lyle Lovett's so cool. You know what I mean? And so I started to think, how can I make my thing swing a little more and be more smooth? Because probably the first thing to do is get rid of the acoustic guitar. So whereas in 1993, I was desperate to get it back front and center on Late Style, which I entirely wrote with a guy called David Nagler, who's my MD for the Cabinet of Wonders, a very talented writer, arranger, and musician. And we wrote all these songs together and I did the lyrics. And we're making another one now. I mean, we've got a second one, which we just this morning made the first recording date, which is going to be June the 7th in Philadelphia with my band, and knock out three or four songs, I hope, that day, basics. The whole idea of Late Style was, I just want to make music. And also, this was right around the time of COVID, and we all know what a terrible, horrible lockdown situation, how isolated we felt and how it drove us all crazy. And I was very worried that Late Style couldn't get made in the manner I wanted it to, but I really felt, because that was a time of rather scruffy looking Zoom concerts and give me $15 and I'll, you know, it was, people were really struggling to find a beautiful way to do things back then. And I really wanted Late Style to be pristine, stylish, elegant, beautiful. And so that's what we went for. Now we did that under the lockdown situation. Now we're going to do the album with real music played live by people, which is what Late Style was meant to be, but we just couldn't do it. I got Prairie Prince to play the drums, and we got Kelly Hogan and Nora O'Connor to sing on it. And we got it all together and it sounded dynamite. But the next one's actually going to have people playing together. And that, I hope, will be Late Style plus, plus, plus.
Well, Wesley, it's been a pleasure to talk to you. This is just only a small fraction of your music. Certainly in terms of the UK, we'll hear some of those songs live on those dates. And I know that you're also supporting the great Loudon Wainwright in June as well. So people in the US can see you as well.
Yeah, that's middle of June in the Midwest, me and Loudon. That'd be great. Thanks a lot and congrats on your show.
My pleasure. Take care.
Bye-bye.
By the time I walked through, I no longer knew it was a door. And our bids weren't successful. Our kids won't get old. It's all a big mess. Better put your bright future. Was lost in the stars, but it came to a premature end. Back to Earth with a bump, I was jumped by a erstwhile boyfriend. Apparently someone isn't quite so on you and me, babe. Let's put the bright future on hold. Who are these people? Who let them in anyhow? You say believing. Well, honey, how about now? I'm too old for this shit, and their shoulders are cold. I don't wanna get with it. I'll put the bright future. Our head on a wall. Your pause. passports expired. The trail is cold, but it's warm by the fire. Let's put the bright future on hold. This song may be gentle, how it came out this way. The next instrumental, there will be nothing to say. And if anyone wonders when the bell tolled, just wait for the thunder.
Journey unfolds in the strange blue stories untold.